Genesis 47, I'm going to read to you verses 1 through 12, then we'll stop and break that down, and then we'll continue on. Genesis 47, verses 1 through 12, said, "So Joseph went in and told Pharaoh, 'My father and my brothers with their flocks and herds and all that they possess have come from the land of Canaan. They are now in the land of Goshen.' And from among his brothers he took 5 men and presented them to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to his brothers, 'What is your occupation?' And they said to Pharaoh, 'Your servants are shepherds as our fathers were.' They said to Pharaoh, 'We have come to sojourn in the land, for there is no pasture for your servants' flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. And now, please let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen.' Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them settle in the land of Goshen. And if you know any able men among them, put them in charge of my livestock.' Then Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and stood him before Pharaoh. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Jacob, 'How many are the days of you, the years of your life?' And Jacob said to Pharaoh, 'The days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life. And they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning.' And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from the presence of Pharaoh. Then Joseph settled his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh had commanded. And Joseph provided his father, his brothers, and all his father's household with food according to the number of their dependents." Now, as we move on to this next section of our study, we're going to try to answer some of the questions that actually arise from these verses. They might be questions you thought of. They might be questions you didn't even think of, but we're going to pull them out now and wrestle with them a little bit. Like, for example, which Pharaoh is this? You know, which Pharaoh is this? The question is this: did Joseph serve under many pharaohs or just one? Now, the honest answer is we really don't 100% know. There's much debate on this subject, but much of the debate comes from those who don't believe the Bible to be accurate. As you study and read up on this, you'll find a lot of people having opinions on all this stuff, but you got to chuck a lot of them that don't believe the Bible is a historical book that can be trusted. But among those who believe the Bible to be true, and by using the dates from Israel's history and using the historical accounts that we have from the Egyptian records, most believe, and I'm in this category, that the king of Egypt, Pharaoh, mentioned in Genesis 40, verses 1 through 4, is Senusert II. His time was 1894 to 1878 B.C. He was also known as Sesostris. So Senusert II or Sesostris II. Go with me to Genesis chapter 40 and look at verses 1 through 4. In Genesis chapter 40, verses 1 through 4, "Sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt." That's the Pharaoh, as you can see. "And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended them, and they continued for some time in custody." So, most believe, and I'm in this category, that when you get to Genesis 40 here, the Pharaoh that Joseph is going to come in contact with first is Senusert II. Again, if you're taking notes, the era of his time was 1894 to 1878 B.C. Also, if you'll read other places, he was also called Sesostris II. But others also believe that Pharaoh mentioned in Genesis 47 is a different Pharaoh in chapter 47. His name is Senusert as well, but it's Senusert III. His time period, or when he ruled, was 1878 to 1841 B.C. Again, another name for him was Sesostris III. So you got Senusert II at chapter 40, and I believe by chapter 47, you have Senusert the third. All right, now, when these two pharaohs' reigns ended and began in Joseph's story, we really don't know. And actually, some say they were all the same pharaoh all the way through Joseph's time. But I actually think there's a hint of a change in chapter 41. Go back with me to Genesis 41. Look at verses 1 and then jump to verse 8 through 13. Genesis 41. Remember, we just saw in Genesis 40 that the Pharaoh got angry with the cupbearer and the baker, and then he put them in prison for some time. They had been there for a while. And as you also know, 2 years later, we've got the situation where Joseph is introduced to the Pharaoh. But look at chapter 41, verse 1, and then 41, verses 8 through 13. After 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile, and behold, there came up out of the Nile 7 cows attractive. We can stop there. Jump down to verse 8. So in the morning, his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was none who could interpret them to Pharaoh. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "I remember my offenses today. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me and the chief baker in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, we dreamed on the same night, he and I each having a dream with its own interpretation. A young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. When we told him, he interpreted our dreams to us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his dream. And as he interpreted to us, so it came about, I was restored to my office, and the baker was hanged." Then, of course, Pharaoh calls for Joseph. Now, if you look at it closely, it could read two ways. It could be that he's afraid to say, "You put me in prison, and you put us in prison," and he just said, "Pharaoh did." Or it also, because of the way that he's describing how it all came out, it's almost like he's talking to another Pharaoh. Again, we don't know. If you had to pin me down, I'm going to say that this is a second Pharaoh by this time of chapter 47 that Joseph is dealing with during his time there for a lot of reasons, but mainly because of the rough idea we know about the timeline of Joseph's life and when the nation of Israel went into captivity, when they went into the land of Goshen before that, all these things. And with the historical records of the Egyptians, I think that Joseph is dealing with two different pharaohs in his lifetime. Again, what does that matter? Not a lot, but if you like that kind of stuff, you're welcome. All right? But we also don't know which of the 5 brothers Joseph presented to Pharaoh and why. Did you catch that? He brought 5 of his brothers before Pharaoh to meet Pharaoh along with his dad. And my brain goes, which 5? Why only 5? And the only thing I can think of is something that was said in Genesis 41, verse 14. Go to Genesis 41 and look at verse 14. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. Part of me wonders if there were only 5 brothers who were willing to shave themselves. You ever thought about that? Having a beard was a big deal to a Jewish man. I wonder if there were 5 who were willing to shave that went before the Pharaoh, because maybe you weren't allowed to go before the Pharaoh unshaven. I don't know. Speculation. But it reminds me of when I was a kid. I'm 1 of 5 kids. I have an older sister and then 4 boys, and we're all real close together in age. My mom had 3 kids in diapers at one time for many, many years, back when they were cloth diapers. But every summer, we would take a trip from New Hampshire down to Florida for a couple of weeks. And to make life easier, my parents had all of us shave our heads, all of us boys. Just shave your heads. We're not dealing with hair and fixing hair and combing hair. And so we literally would get buzz cuts. But I have a brother, John, who had curly hair, and he would not let his hair be shaved. We're like, come on, we're all doing it. Just you do it, and you know. And so when all those pictures, you look back at those pictures, all the rest of us boys are bald. And John's got his wavy, curly hair because he didn't. He goes, I don't get to see the Pharaoh. He wouldn't have his hair cut. Again, what does that matter? Nothing. Just let's move on. But Pharaoh is impressed enough with Joseph's brothers that he puts them in charge of his own flocks. He sees something in these men. He's already seen something in Joseph that he was like, man, if you guys are anything like your brother, I want you guys to be in charge of my own flocks. And then Joseph does something else. He gives honor to his father by introducing Jacob to Pharaoh and Pharaoh to Jacob. Now, let this one sink in for a minute. Put yourself in Joseph's shoes. Is there a chance he might be a little bit afraid that his older father might do something to embarrass him? I mean, let's be honest. As we get older, guys, we care less and less what people think, don't we? And we look silly to our kids. Our kids roll their eyes. Dad, don't embarrass me. But but at the same time, we see Joseph, he honors his dad by actually introducing his dad to the Pharaoh. You have to realize, this is the most powerful person on the face of the earth at this time. And he wants his dad to meet him. It made me think about my dad. Have you ever noticed as dads, we get real proud of the accomplishments of our sons and our daughters? And a lot of times we brag about our kids and what they've done and who they work for. I remember when years and years ago, I was in seminary and I went on staff. And then while I was in seminary, I was on staff. And then when I graduated seminary, I was put on staff full time at a very big church in New Orleans. And they had color business cards that showed the property. And my dad, whenever he'd visit, would come and take some of the church's business cards so that when he went around, he would show people, my son's a pastor at this church. You know? Joseph honored his father by introducing him to the Pharaoh. And Jacob does something very interesting. He blesses Pharaoh. Did you see that? He actually, if you read it, he blesses him twice. He blesses Pharaoh. And most likely, Jacob pronounced a blessing on Pharaoh in the name of his God, Jehovah. Now, the good news is, Joseph wouldn't have been embarrassed by this because it's already been obvious to everyone that Joseph is a Hebrew and Joseph is a believer in the true God. Because he's already revealed that the true God is the one who can interpret the dreams, and it's through God's revealing the dreams to interpretation to Joseph that the nation of Egypt is being spared and all that. But I love the fact that Jacob comes and he blesses the Pharaoh. He doesn't just bow his head and say, really nice to meet you, sir. He don't care. And he says, I want to put a blessing on you in the name of my God. And then Pharaoh asks Jacob how old he was. And Jacob tells him 130 years. But did you notice how he said how old he was? Go back to chapter 47 and look at verse 7, and we'll go from there. Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and stood him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Jacob, how many are the days of the years of your life? In other words, how old are you? Jacob said to Pharaoh, the days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning. Then he blesses Pharaoh and he goes out from his presence. He describes the years of his life as few and evil. He was comparing his life to his father's and his grandfather's, and he thought that they lived longer than he would and had much more blessings than he had. Abraham actually will live to be 175, or lived to be 175. Isaac lived to be 180. And as we know from the scriptures, Jacob's only going to live to be 147. But he said, few and evil have been the years of my sojourning. Jacob's life has been hard. Now, a lot of that is because of his own choosing. A lot of that is because of the shaping of God in Jacob's life. But I also want to talk about the fact that he called his years sojourning. Now, that's really important for us, all of us, especially those of us who are in Christ. Did y'all notice back in verse 3, Pharaoh said to Joseph's brothers, what's your occupation? They said to Pharaoh, your servants are shepherds, as our fathers were. They said to Pharaoh, we have come to sojourn in the land, For there's no pasture for your servants' flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. Now let your servants dwell in the land of Canaan. Did you catch what they said? We don't plan on living here forever. We would like permission to sojourn. The word sojourn means you're not permanently settled. You're on the move. And Jacob understood that his life, even though he was in the land God promised him, he had never been given that land permanently as his, and he was a sojourner in that land. I hope you understand that that's us too. The thing that's going to make it really hard for you to follow the Lord in this life is if you try to get comfortable here. Because God's working on you and using many different ways to do that to get you ready for your eternal home, not one made by human hands. Go with me to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11, look at verses 8 and 9. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. Look at verses 13 through 16. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak like this make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. Oh, he then goes and says, if they had been thinking of the land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. One of the things that's hurt people over the years is because this land to come is called a heavenly one, people think it means they just talk thinking about heaven. No, go back to what we just read there in verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. Did you catch that? He was told, Genesis chapter 13, Genesis chapter 17, I'm going to give to you and your descendants this land. And he tells them, look around, far as you can see, far as you can walk. I'm going to give to you and your descendants this land. Isaac was told the same thing in chapter 26 of Genesis. Jacob was told the same thing in chapter 28 of Genesis. I'm going to give to you and your descendants this land. And then the scripture tells us these all died not having received what was promised. Why? Because it wasn't time in this life for them to receive their inheritance. But again, folks, again, by the way, for those of you that are online, I made this announcement just prior to when we started our recording. The messages that I'm beginning to preach now around the country on God's defending Israel are available on our Just Preach Your Facebook page right now. There's a link there. They'll be on our YouTube channel, Lord willing, by the end of the week. But let me say this to you. In there, I lay out fully and very carefully with a lot of scriptures how God promised that specific piece of property to the nation of Israel as an eternal inheritance. Oh, he said, you're going to disobey me and you're going to be removed from the land, but I'm going to bring you back. But then you're going to be removed again. And in the very last days, I will bring you back to that land and I'll set up my kingdom there. And Jesus himself even said in the book of Matthew that many are going to come from the east and the west and sit at the table in the kingdom with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You're going to see at the end of our study tonight, when we get to the end of chapter 47, that when Jacob's about to die, he says, make sure you put my bones back in that land. We'll deal with why he says that later on, but don't miss this. They saw themselves as sojourners in the land, and they even said, for this time period that we're going to be in Egypt, we don't plan on living here the rest of our life. We want to sojourn in Egypt. Go to Psalm 119. Psalm 119, look at verses 17 through 19. Psalm 119, verses 17 and through 19 says, deal bountifully with your servant that I may live and keep your word. Open my eyes that I may behold wondrous things out of your law. I am a sojourner on the earth. Hide not your commandments from me. My soul is consumed with longing for your rules at all times. You rebuke the insolent, accursed ones who you wander from your commandments. But again, we can stop right there. I meant to stop in verse 19. I'm a sojourner on the earth. Hide not your commandments from me. Go back with me to 1 Chronicles. 1 Chronicles chapter 29. Look at verses 10 through 16. 1 Chronicles 29, 10 through 16. Therefore David blessed the Lord in the presence of all the assembly. And David said, "Blessed are you, O Lord, the God of Israel, our Father, forever and ever. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty, for all that is in the heavens and in the earth is yours. Yours, is the kingdom, O Lord, and you are exalted as head above all. Both riches and honor come from you, and you rule over all. In your hand are power and might. In your hand it is to make great and to give strength to all. And now we thank you, our God, and praise your glorious name. But who am I, and what is my people, for that we should be able thus to offer willingly? For all things come from you, and of your own have we given you. For we are strangers before you, and sojourners, as all our fathers were. Our days on the earth are like a shadow, and there is no abiding. O Lord our God, all this abundance that we have provided for building you a house for your holy name comes from your hand and is all your own." David understood that as they were giving to God this wealth and all the gold and the silver and the materials for the building of the temple, he was reminded of the fact, anything we have comes from you. This is all about you. We're just sojourners on the land. And if we have anything to give you, you gave it to us in the first place. All we're doing is giving back to you what is yours. But we're sojourners here on the earth. I'm just going to chase that for a little bit longer here. One of the sad things that's happening to the church is that a lot of Christians are being taught that Christianity is about your best life now. We're being taught that we should be focusing on here and now and being prosperous and all these things. And actually, if you were to go back and reread chapter 11 of Hebrews, the Hall of Fame of Faith, these men and women were commended for the fact that they weren't living for this life. They were living for the one to come. Oh, yes, the one to come is going to be 1,000 years on this earth. It's going to be reworked. It's going to be an amazing place. We'll have time to deal with that maybe later on in other studies. But let me just say this to you. And then there's going to be an eternal home, the new heaven and the new earth for eternity after the 1,000 years of Christ on this earth. We are not living for now. We're just being prepared and shaped for now. We're in this process now of God doing his work in us to conform us into the image of Christ. We're in this process of storing up eternity and of rewards. But folks, let me tell you, if you're more interested in staying comfortable in this life, you're going to miss out on what God is doing. And let's be honest, with what's going on right now on the globe, do any of us really know that we'll be comfortable in the next few years? Or days, or weeks, or months. We really don't know how it's all going to play out. And by the way, everybody wants to jump on one side of the political aisle or another. Don't get sucked into that, Christians. Don't get sucked into that. We're not living for here. We're living for the world to come. And again, because of time, please go to the links that are there on our Facebook page or going to be on our YouTube channel. I lay out in great detail how in this time, as God purifies his people Israel and shapes them and disciplines them, do not fall into that group that's going to be celebrating when they go through trials or against them. God is taking names. You don't believe me? You go read the book of Obadiah. There's only one chapter. A lot of you can read one chapter. You go read Obadiah. And in Obadiah, God tells the nation of Edom, this is the descendants of Esau, "I've been watching how you have treated Israel. When I was disciplining them and taking them into captivity in Babylon, you celebrated. You were against your own relatives. Oh, you not only celebrated, When they were taken out of the land, you went into their houses and looted them. Oh, and when some of them escaped from Nebuchadnezzar and ran out, you actually rounded them up and helped Nebuchadnezzar catch the ones who escaped. And I've taken names. And because of that, the nation of Edom will cease to exist when I come and set up my kingdom. And folks, God told Abraham way back in Genesis 12, 1 through 3, I'm going to bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. The problem is right now, the world and the church even, unfortunately, in a lot of categories are saying, you can't call the nation of Israel the chosen people. They're not living for God. They're not looking like his people. And people are being taught that the church has replaced Israel. Please listen closely. It's all laid out in the videos. I want you to go, but let me say this to you. God says over and over and over that the reason Israel still exists has nothing to do with them and has everything to do with his promises to the forefathers. That's laid out in so many places. I say when you look at Israel now, don't look at Israel now. Look at who Israel will be in God's eternal plan. That's who we're talking about. And between now and then, they've got to be who they are as a nation. I'm rooting for Israel, not this Israel. I'm rooting for the Israel that will be. In order for all the prophecies that are still to come, where they're going to be at some point, according to Ezekiel 38, recovered from war, living at peace. Boy, that'd be awesome, wouldn't it? Yeah, but it's a temporary awesome. But they're going to be recovered from war, living at peace, when the Gog and Magog battle begins in Ezekiel 38 and 39, when Russia and Iran, who's still going to exist, by the way, at that time, and Turkey and Germany and Ethiopia and these nations all come against them. And the Antichrist at some point is going to reveal himself to be who he is, and he's going to chase them into the wilderness. Two-thirds are going to be killed. Folks, there's so much more to go on. And the sad thing is right now, too many Christians are fighting with each other over the political side of the aisle they're on and about Israel. And all I'm saying to you is this. How many of you, I'm going to show of hands right now, how many of you thank God you're saved through faith in Jesus Christ. All right, I'm okay, hands down. For those of you that say you're saved through faith in Jesus, how many of you have walked in full obedience to Jesus since he saved you? How come nobody's raising their hand? Well, how come my hands are down? Could it be possible that there were times in your life that someone looked at you and said, you're not one of the chosen? But how come? How come you know you're going to heaven? How come you raised your hands? Because of the promises of God and how he doesn't change his mind. He doesn't break his promise. When I talk about Israel, I'm talking about God's eternal plan and their beloved for the sake of their forefathers and the promise of God. They may not look like the chosen people right now, but according to God's word, they are. Leave them alone. Support them. Pray for them. I don't care if our government gives them all our money because God's going to take care of us. And he'll bless those who bless them and curse those. And if you go against his people, even in when he is disciplining them, he's taking names. You just go read Joel chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, and how when Jesus comes back, he's going to gather all the nations and to judge them according to how they treated these brothers of mine, Israel. The sheep and the goats in Matthew 25, 31 and following is Joel chapter 3 being fulfilled. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all his angels with him, that's verse 31 of Matthew 25, he will sit on his glorious throne. By the way, there's a prophecy, a couple of them actually, that said that Jesus was going to sit on David's throne. Has he sat on David's throne yet? No. Oh, by the way, where's David's throne? Is David's throne on the earth or in heaven? It's on the earth. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, he's going to sit on his glorious throne. He's going to sit on the throne of David from Jerusalem. He's going to gather all the nations and judge them according to how they treated these brothers of mine. You and I don't get into heaven because we gave someone a glass of water, because we visited them in prison. Matthew 25 and the sheep and the goats is actually Joel chapter 3, 1 and 2, when Jesus comes back to set up his kingdom. Is Israel deserving of punishment? Yes. Are they wicked? Definitely. Are they probably more wicked than any other nation? According to God's measurement, yes, because they've had the most light revealed. Then why do they still exist? Because of God's eternal plan and his eternal promises. And you don't want to jump into that group of people that says, well, he didn't really mean that. Do you want God saying that about his promises to you? Thank God I'm not saved because of how good I've been. Thank God I'm saved and eternally secure because of God's promises and because he's confirmed it with his Spirit. So folks, let me say this to you. As we continue to look at God's plan for the people of Israel, keep in mind his eternal promises. That's who we mean when we say Israel. All right? Now, as we can see in how Jacob responded to Pharaoh, he's still struggling with being weary in the struggle of this life. Anybody else feel that? Anybody else get a little weary in your sojourning? But just before he dies, we're going to see in chapter 48, jump over to chapter 48, look at verses 15 and 16. Just before he dies, he starts to have a better perspective on all that God has been doing in his life. Chapter 48, look at verses 15 and 16. And he blessed Joseph, and he said, "The God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil," isn't this the guy that earlier said, "My days have been few and evil"? "The angel who has redeemed me from all evil blessed the boys. And in them let my name be carried on, and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth." When Jacob is at the very end of his life and he's blessing all of his sons, and here he blesses his grandsons, Joseph's two sons, he says, "Actually, when I sit still enough to really think about it reasonably and honestly, as hard as my life has been, God is the one who's taken care of it and redeemed me from all the evil." And he's got a proper view. I'm going to make a statement to you that'll help you. It helps me. We can all better handle the sojourn of this life when we take our eyes off ourselves and our situation and put them back on God for a true perspective. We need to do that on a regular basis. We need to renew our minds. We need to stop looking at ourselves and enjoying the pity party. And we need to go back to looking at who he is and what he said and holding him to what he has said. Let me show you somebody that had a problem with it like you and I probably do. Go to Psalm 73. Psalm 73. This was written by a worship leader in Israel named Asaph. I love the fact that Asaph was willing to write this out. A lot of us have felt this way, but we would have never dared say it. Listen to what he says. He says, "Truly God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet had almost stumbled. My steps had nearly slipped. For I was envious of the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. They have no pangs until death. Their bodies are fat and sleek. They're not in trouble as others are. They're not stricken like the rest of mankind. Therefore, pride is their necklace. Violence covers them as a garment. Their eyes swell out through fatness, and their hearts overflow with follies. They scoff and they speak with malice. Loftily, they threaten oppression. They set their mouths against the heavens, and their tongues struts through the earth. Therefore, his people turn back to them and find no fault in them. And they say, 'How can God know? Is there knowledge in the Most High?' Behold, these are the wicked, always at ease. They increase in riches." You ever seen their private jets? "All in vain have I kept my heart clean and washed my hands in innocence. For all the day long I have been stricken and rebuked every morning." Now, if I had said I'll speak this, if I had actually said it out loud, I would have betrayed the generation of your children. But when I thought how to understand this, it seemed to me a wearisome task until I went into the sanctuary of God. And then I discerned their end. Truly, you set them, the ones I've been envious of, you set them in slippery places. You make them fall to ruin. How they are destroyed in a moment, swept away utterly by terrors." You want to talk about somebody passing from this life to hell? "Like a dream when one awakes, O Lord, when you rouse yourself, you despise them as phantoms. Now when my soul was embittered, when I was pricked in heart, I was brutish and ignorant, I was like a beast toward you. Nevertheless, I'm continually with you. You hold my right hand. You guide me with your counsel, and afterwards you will receive me to glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing on earth that I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Behold, those who are far from you shall perish. You put an end to everyone who is unfaithful to you. But as for me, it's good to be near God. I have made the Lord God my refuge, that I may tell of all your works. You see what he said? He said, as I struggle in this life, doesn't the Bible say because of Christ, for his name's sake, we're given over to death every day? Years ago when, his name just jumped out of my head, Problem of Pain, C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis wrote the book, The Problem of Pain. He talks about the fact that when an artist is working on a masterpiece, he'll scribble and erase and scribble and erase. And the piece of paper would probably say, why are you being so hard on me? Why don't you just draw a stick figure? But he's putting the paper under that kind of stress because he has in mind a masterpiece. And for those of us who are Christ, we are being conformed into the image of Christ. By the way, that's not a comfortable process. Our flesh does not want that. But he loves us. And he loves us enough to keep conforming us into the image of his Son so that he can reward us for eternity with more. But in that process of him working on us, there are many times I'm sure all of us have looked around at the people that don't worship the Lord and been a little envious, been a little jealous. But then he said this. He said, but then I remembered their end. Do you know what he really said here when he talked about how they're swept away with terrors and they despise them as phantoms? Have you ever thought about, though, the wicked right now that don't know the Lord are one breath away from hell? They're one heartbeat away from eternity in hell. Then he said, you know what? I don't envy them after all. Because I know that whom have I in heaven but you? I know that I'm one breath or one heartbeat away from eternity in your presence and no longer in this body. Do y'all realize that from the moment you leave this body, you will always be with the Lord, even when he comes back to set up his kingdom on the earth, and even then when he makes the new heaven and the new earth? From the moment we leave here, we will be with the Lord forever. Face to face in his presence. And I just want to encourage some of you that are weary in the sojourn. You might have been like Jacob and said to whoever asked you how old you were, I'm so far old and it's been a long, hard life. Hopefully you can get to that point where you realize, yes, it's been a journey, but God's been with me and he'll finish what he started. Now, let's read chapter 47, verses 13 through 31. Now there was no food in all the land, for the famine was very severe, so that the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished by reason of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan in exchange for the grain that they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. And when the money was all spent in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan, and all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, give us food. Why should we die before your eyes? For our money is gone. Joseph answered, well, give your livestock and I'll give you food in exchange for your livestock if your money's gone. So they brought in their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them food in exchange for the horses, the flocks, the herds, the donkeys. He supplied them with food in exchange for all their livestock that year. And when, that year was ended, they came to him the following year and said to him, we're not going to hide from my Lord that our money is all spent. The herds of livestock are my Lord's. There's nothing left in the sight of my Lord but our bodies and our land. Why should we die before your eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for food, and we with our land will be servants to Pharaoh. And give us seed that we may live and not die, and that the land may not be desolate. So Joseph brought all the land of Egypt. Bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. For all the Egyptians sold their fields because the famine was severe on them. The land became Pharaoh's. As for the people, he made servants of them from one end of Egypt to the other. Only the land of the priests he didn't buy, for the priests had a fixed allowance from Pharaoh and lived on the allowance that Pharaoh gave them. Therefore, they did not sell their land. Then Joseph said to the people, "Behold, I have this day bought you and your land for Pharaoh. Now here is seed for you, and you shall sow the land. And at harvest you shall give a fifth to Pharaoh, and 4/5 shall be your own, as seed for the field, and as food for yourselves and for your house and your households, and as food for your little ones." And they said, "You have saved our lives. May it please my Lord, we'll be servants to Pharaoh." So Joseph made it a statute concerning the land of Egypt, and it stands to this day that Pharaoh should have the fifth. The land of the priests alone did not become Pharaoh's. Thus Israel settled in the land of Egypt, in the land of Goshen, and they gained possessions in it, and were fruitful and multiplied greatly. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the days of Jacob, the years of his life, were 147 years. And when the time drew near that Israel must die, he called his son Joseph and said to him, "If now I have found favor in your sight, put your hand under my thigh and promise to deal kindly and truly with me. Do not bury me in Egypt, but let me lie with my fathers. Carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burying place." He answered, "I will do as you have said." And he said, "Swear to me." And he swore to him. Then Israel bowed himself upon the head of his bed. Now, as we wrap up our study for tonight, we wrap up this chapter, I want to point out a couple more things. Number one, the Egyptians are so grateful for Pharaoh and Joseph saving their lives that they gave them all of their money, their animals, their land, and themselves. Did you see that in verse 25? They said, "You have saved our lives. May it please my Lord, we'll be servants to Pharaoh." Now, I'm hoping pretty much all of you see the correlation here. It should seem pretty clear to those of us who have the Lord and love the Lord and worship Him for saving our lives. We gladly give Him everything, including ourselves. That should be our attitude as well. My house is yours. My land is yours. My money's yours. My life is yours. Isn't that what the Bible teaches? Go to 1 Corinthians 6. 1 Corinthians 6, verses 19 and 20. First Corinthians 6, verses 19 and 20. "Or do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? You are not your own, for you were bought with a price. So glorify God in your body." Go to Galatians chapter 2. Look at verse 20. Galatians 2, verse 20. "I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me." Go to Romans 14. Look at verses 7 through 9. Romans 14, verses 7 through 9. "For none of us lives to himself, and none of us dies to himself. For if we live, we live to the Lord, and if we die, we die to the Lord. So then, whether we live or whether we die, we're the Lord's. For to this end, Christ died and lived again, that he might be Lord both of the dead and of the living." Go to 1 Peter chapter 1. 1 Peter 1, verses 13 through 25. 'Therefore, preparing your minds for action and being sober-minded, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, do not be conformed to the passions of your former ignorance, but as he who called you is holy, so you also be holy in all your conduct. Since it is written, 'You shall be holy, for I am holy.' And if you call on him as Father, who judges impartially according to each one's deeds, conduct yourselves with fear throughout the time of your exile, knowing that you were ransomed from the futile ways inherited from your forefathers, not with perishable things such as silver or gold, but with the precious blood of Christ, like that of a lamb without blemish or spot." Did you catch that? "You were bought with a price." Keep reading. "He was there known for, was foreknown before the foundation of the world, but was made manifest in these last times for the sake of you, who through him are believers in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and your hope are in God. having purified your souls by your obedience to the truth for sincere brotherly love, love one another earnestly from a pure heart, since you have been born again, not with perishable seed, but of imperishable, through the living and abiding word of God. For all flesh is like grass, and all its glory like the flower of the grass. The grass withers and the flower falls, but the word of the Lord remains forever. And this word is the good news that was preached to you. We've been bought with a price. By the way, what was the price? His own blood. The Egyptians were just so glad for food. They're like, we're yours, gladly. We'll become your servants. We'll gladly give you our land. You can have our animals. You've had all our money. We're just so glad you're keeping us alive. That should be our attitude as well. It was years ago, I shared this illustration with you. I heard a preacher years ago talk about how he's at a high school football game, and his son was sitting there with him, and his son didn't have any money. And his son said, Dad, can I have some money? I want to get some Skittles. So his dad gave him the money for the Skittles. The kid went and bought the Skittles with his dad's money, and then he came back and he sat down and he was eating the Skittles. And the dad leaned over and said to his son, hey, can I have a Skittle? The son goes, no, they're mine. They're my Skittles. And the dad said three thoughts went through his mind at that instant. The first one was this: I'm bigger than you. And if I want those Skittles, I can get them. Secondly, he said, those aren't your Skittles. I paid for those Skittles. Those are actually my Skittles. And then he said the third thought was, I thought to myself, I've got a $100 bill in my back pocket right now. If I wanted to go down to that snack bar and buy all their Skittles, I could. And I could rain them all over you if I wanted. But then he realized, because he was the preacher, was telling the story about what was going on in his head. He said, then God said the same to me. Why, when everything you have is from me, when I ask you for something, do you say, no, that's mine? Or I had plans for it. God says, I'm bigger than you. I can take it if I want. That's actually mine. I gave you what you have. And actually, if I wanted to, I could just bomb you with way more if you would just trust me. Folks, again, however that plays out for each of us, I can guarantee you in all of our lives, God's asking us to trust him somewhere. He's saying, look, give it to me. Give yourself to me. Trust me. But Lord, I got plans for that, or myself. And there's a second thing I want to pull out from our chapter here, chapter 47. As nice as Goshen might have been, Jacob was still holding on to the promise of God that the land of Canaan would be given to he and his forefathers and descendants one day. So that's why he makes Joseph swear that they'll bury his bones back in the land of Canaan. I mean, he's so serious about it. Remember how we talked earlier about put your hand under my thigh? That's a serious swear. And then he says, say it again. Swear to me. Joseph says, I swear to you, Dad, I will. Why is this so important? Now, let's be honest. Let's think for a second. What does the land of Canaan look like right now? Dead, dry, horrible. What does the land of Goshen look like? They got grass for the herds and all this stuff. It would have been real easy to say, you know what? This ain't bad. Let's just stay here. But no, he was looking forward to what had been promised him in the future. And he says, look, I don't believe I'm going to see it in this lifetime, but I believe I will see it, therefore put my bones. Why is he so concerned about putting his bones back in that land? Well, you may not know this. Why would he care about his bones? Because just like Job, and by the way, I believe Job lived around the time of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, according to how it reads and everything. Just like Job, he believed in a resurrection to come, a bodily resurrection. Go to Job chapter 19. Go to Job 19. Look at verses 23 through 27. Job 19, 23 through 27. Job says, oh, that my words were written, oh, that they were inscribed in a book. Oh, that with an iron pen and lead they were engraved in the rock forever. For I know that my Redeemer lives, and at the last he will stand upon the earth. And after my skin has been thus destroyed, yet in my flesh I shall see God, whom I shall see for myself, and my eyes shall behold and not another. My heart faints within me. After my flesh has been destroyed, I know I'm going to see him. I'm going to see him in my flesh. Did you catch that? After I die, I'm going to see him in my flesh. We won't have time to turn there, but if you go to John chapter 11, verses 17 through 27, you remember the story where Jesus goes to raise Lazarus from the dead? And he gets word that he's sick. His sisters say, hey, the one you love is sick. And it's interesting in that situation. Jesus gets word that Lazarus is sick, and he doesn't move. By the way, that would have gotten many a pastor fired. I called, and you didn't answer, or you heard, and you didn't come to the hospital right away. But Jesus actually lets him die. He turns to his disciples. He says, this isn't going to end in death. And then he said, let's go. He says, Lazarus has fallen asleep. Let's go wake him up. After he dies, he says, Lazarus has fallen asleep. Let's go wake him up. And the disciples said, well, if he's sleeping, Lord, that's good. Let him sleep. Let him rest. You know, a little sleep will do him good. He'll probably get better if he gets a little more sleep. And Jesus turns to him and said, Lazarus is dead. When I said sleep, I meant he's dead. He died. But let's go. And as they're heading back, they're a little bit afraid because the last time they were in that area in Judah, they tried to kill him. That's when Thomas says, let's go and die with him. No, people don't talk about that much when they talk about doubting Thomas. They don't remember that Thomas is the one who said, let's go and die with him. But when he gets there, Mary stays at the house. Martha comes out to meet him, and she gives him the shaky finger. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And she said, but even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask. And he says, your brother will rise again. And she says, I know he'll rise at the resurrection at the last day. Did you catch that? Old Testament saints believed in a resurrection. By the way, that's why the Pharisees and the Sadducees, there are other reasons, but the Pharisees and Sadducees had their big debate. Pharisees believed that there was a physical resurrection after we die. The Sadducees didn't. But the Old Testament saints understood that there was going to be a bodily resurrection one day, and Isaac had died already, Jacob's dad, and had not been given that land that he was promised. Abraham, his grandfather, had already died and not been given that land that he was promised. Yet Abraham bought a piece of property, buried himself and his wife Sarah in that cave. Isaac was buried in that cave. And Jacob said, it hasn't happened yet. And I don't fully understand it because God promised my father and my grandfather that land. And they put their bones there for the resurrection. It's going to have to happen at the resurrection. Make sure my bones aren't buried here because I want to be there when it happens. For years as a pastor, when I've done funerals, of course, a part of it is a graveside. And for years as a pastor, a lot of times I would feel led of God to read the passage in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 13 through 18. Ephesians 4, 13 through 18, where Paul talks about the rapture. Talks about how we don't grieve like the rest of men who have no hope. We believe that Jesus died and that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep in him. Did you catch that? Those who have already passed on, their bodies go down to the dust of the earth, but they go be with the Lord. But when Jesus comes to gather his church, he's going to come in the clouds, and those who have already gone with him are going to come with him, and their bodies, Paul said, are going to be transformed. Their body's going to come up out of the ground. Paul even talked about that in 1 Corinthians 15. We who are alive will not precede those who have fallen asleep, but their body's going to come rise first, and then we who are on the earth at that time will be transformed as we go be with the Lord. And for years, I would tell people, quit looking at this grave site as a cemetery or a grave place. This is resurrection ground. If you happen to be around here when Jesus comes back to gather his church, it'll be kind of cool. Because from here is where their body's going to come up out of the ground, those that know the Lord. And they're going to get their new bodies. And those of us alive at the time will get transformed and go join with them and go be with the Lord. I believe that 100%. You know why? Because Jesus said it over and over. He said, in my Father's house are many rooms. If it weren't so, I would have told you. Now, I'm going to go and prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me where I am. Did you catch that? That's got to be prior to the second coming when he comes and sets up his kingdom on the earth. He's going to come and take us. He said, I'm going to my Father's house. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I'm going to come back and take you to be with me where I am. Folks, don't let people fool you. The church is going to be removed before the tribulation period, that last seven in Daniel 9, 1 through 27, which was decreed for Israel and the city of Jerusalem. I love, and I brought this out in the video series that I want you to go watch. I love how over and over God says through his prophets, when I restore the fortunes of Israel and Judah and Jerusalem. You know why? Because he knew there'd be some people out here nowadays saying, well, Israel doesn't mean Israel, it means the church. No, he clarified it. Israel and Judah and Jerusalem, you can't claim that stuff. We're going to be taken away, and then he's going to finish that last seven-year period prophesied in Daniel 9, 1 through 27. And at the end of that tribulation period, well, let me read you something cool. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 4. This isn't in my notes. This is free. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 4. Look at verse 26 and following. I call heaven and earth to witness against you today. This is God speaking to the nation of Israel before they go into the promised land. This is Deuteronomy right before they go into the promised land. I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that you will soon utterly perish from the land that you're going over the Jordan to possess. You will not live long in it, but will be utterly destroyed, and the Lord will scatter you among the peoples. And you'll be left few in number among the nations where the Lord will drive you. And there you're going to serve gods of wood and stone, the work of human hands, that neither see nor hear nor eat nor smell. But from there, listen, you will seek the Lord your God, and you will find him if you search after him with all your heart and with all your soul. When you're in what? Oh, that's not an accident, folks. The nation of Israel has been in different types of tribulation all the way through, but there is a period coming called the tribulation period. When you are in tribulation, and all these things come upon you when? In the latter days, you will return to the Lord your God and obey his voice. For the Lord your God is a merciful God. He'll not leave you or destroy you or forget the covenant with your fathers that he swore to them. That's one of just many, many passages that clearly lays out God's eternal plan for Israel. He said, look, I'm going to bring you into this land, and I'm going to give you my laws, but let me just tell you, I already know what you're going to do. And I already know what I'm going to do in response. And I'm going to bring you in and out and in and out, but there's going to come a point where I'm going to scatter you to all the nations. And until the latter days, you're going to be really kind of going through it, but then you're going to come back, and you're going to go through tribulation. We don't have time, but in Hosea chapter 2, God promises through the prophet Hosea that he's going to allure them in the wilderness. What did Jesus tell the nation of Israel and the people of Judah? When you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, don't even go back and get your coat. Run into the wilderness. And Revelation tells us they'll be protected for 3.5 years. Folks, it's all there in the Bible. But what we've done all these years is we have taken the promises of God, and when we don't see how they could be fulfilled because it hadn't happened yet or it's been a long time, we then quickly go, well, maybe it didn't mean that. You don't want to go there, because if you go there, then you're going to have to start doing that with God's promises to you. I love Numbers 23:19. God is not a man that he should change his mind. Has he not said it? Will he not do it? Are you holding him to everything he's promised you through Christ? Well, let him keep all of his promises to Israel as well. And Jacob, even though his grandfather had never seen it, and his father had never seen it, he believed it was still going to happen, and he said, put my bones back in that land, because one day I'm going to come up again, come to life again, and I'm going to be in the land he promised me when that happens. Oh, that we would take him at his word that much, even if we don't see how or when. Love you. There is no Bible study next week. It's the week that Becky and I get to chase each other around Disney. So we love you. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye.